legend darkening the sky. Mount of Vishnu, whose beak smashes chariots. The Garuda bird circled above Allendale, circled and passed beyond the hills of rock that stood behind the city. Garuda! The word ran through the town, the fields, the temple, the grove. If he did not fly alone, it was known that only a god could use the Garuda bird for a mount. There was silence. After those shrieks and that thunder of pinions, voices seemed naturally to drop to a whisper. The enlightened one stood upon the road before the grove, his monks moving about him, facing in the direction of the hills of rock. Sugata came to his side and stood there.
"It was but a spring ago," he said.
Tathagatha nodded.
"Ryald failed," said Sugata. "What new thing comes from heaven?"
The Buddha shrugged.
"I fear for you, my teacher," he said. "In all my lifetimes, you have been my only friend. Your teaching has given me peace. Why can they not leave you alone? You are the most harmless of men, and your doctrine the gentlest. What ill could you possibly bear them?"
The other turned away. At that moment, with a mighty beating of the air and a jagged cry from its opened beak, the Garuda bird rose once more above the hills. This time it did not circle over the town, but climbed to a great height in the heavens and swept off to the north. Such was the speed of its passing that it was gone in a matter of moments.
"Its passenger has dismounted and remains behind," suggested Sugata.
The Buddha walked within the purple grove. He came from beyond the hills of stone, walking. He came to a passing place through stone, and he followed this trail, his red leather boots silent on the rocky path. Ahead, there was a sound of running water, from where a small stream cut across his way. Shrugging his blood-bright cloak back over his shoulders, he advanced upon a bend in the trail, the ruby head of his scimitar gleaming in his crimson sash. Rounding a corner of stone, he came to a halt. One waited ahead, standing beside the log that led across the stream. His eyes narrowed for an instant, then he moved forward again. It was a small man who stood there, wearing the dark garments of a pilgrim, caught about with a leather harness from which was suspended a short, curved blade of bright steel. This man's head was closely shaven, save for a small lock of white hair. His eyebrows were white above eyes that were dark, and his skin was pale. His ears appeared to be pointed. The traveler raised his hand and spoke to this man, saying,
"Good afternoon, pilgrim."
The man did not reply, but moved to bar his way, positioning himself before the log that led across the stream.
"Pardon me, good pilgrim, but I am about to cross here, and you are making my passage difficult," he stated. "You are mistaken, Lord Yama, if you think you are about to pass here," replied the other.
The one in red smiled, showing a long row of even, white teeth.
"It is always a pleasure to be recognized," he acknowledged, "even by one who conveys misinformation concerning other matters." "I do not fence with words," said the man in black.
"Oh?" The other raised his eyebrows in an expression of exaggerated inquiry.
"With what then do you fence, sir? Surely not that piece of bent metal you bear?" "None other. I took it for some barbarous prayer stick at first. I understand that this is a region fraught with strange cults and primitive sects. For a moment, I took you to be a devotee of some such superstition. But if, as you say, it is indeed a weapon, then I trust you are familiar with its use?"
"Somewhat," replied the man in black.
"Good then," said Yama, "for I dislike having to kill a man who does not know what he is about. I feel obligated to point out to you, however,
that when you stand before the Highest for judgment, you will be accounted a suicide." The other smiled faintly. "Any time that you are ready, Death God, I will facilitate the passage of your spirit from out its fleshy envelope." "One more item only, then," said Yama, "and I shall put a quick end to conversation. Give me a name to tell the priests, so that they shall know for whom they offer the rites." "I renounced my final name but a short while back," answered the other. "For this reason, Kali's consort must take his death of one who is nameless." "Riled, you are a fool," said Yama, and drew his blade. The man in black drew his. "And it is fitting that you go unnamed to your doom. You betrayed your goddess." "Life is full of betrayals," replied the other, before he struck. "By opposing you now and in this manner, I also betray the teachings of my new master. But I must follow the dictates of my heart. Neither my old name nor my new do therefore fit me, nor are they deserved, so call me by no name." Then his blade was fire, leaping everywhere, clicking, blazing. Yama fell back before this onslaught, giving ground foot by foot, moving only his wrist as he parried the blows that fell about him. Then, after he had retreated 10 paces, he stood his ground and would not be moved. His parries widened slightly, but his ripostes became more sudden now, and were interspersed with feints and unexpected attacks. They swaggered blades till their perspiration fell upon the ground in showers, and then Yama began to press the attack, slowly forcing his opponent into a retreat. Step by step he recovered the 10 paces he had given. When they stood again upon the ground where the first blow had been struck, Yama acknowledged over the clashing of steel, "Well have you learned your lessons, Riled. Better even than I had thought. Congratulations." As he spoke, his opponent wove his blade through an elaborate double feint and scored a light touch that cut his shoulder, drawing blood that immediately